Hey everybody, it's Pax. I have been an independent futures trader since 1997, almost 27 years. I don't feel old enough to be able to say I've done anything for 27 years, but I have. I love trading. I love talking about it. So join Mandela and I in the next hour and 15 minutes and listen to our show together.
Coming in hot.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to episode 15 of the Investing Blueprint. Yours truly, Mandela. I have Andrew and I have PJ. We are so excited to bring Pax to you today. How you guys doing? How's everything going?
Doing well, mate. How you guys making out?
Good, good, good. Life is good. Life is good. PJ, do you want to just let everybody know who our sponsors are, who are helping us to bring this phenomenal interview with Pax to them today?
Sure, sure. So first off, we want to thank our title sponsors, Orchid Nail Spa. Check them out for all of your nail care, and you can hit them up at orchidspabda.com. Next, we have our Mona Lisa Cruises. You can check them out and see the island from a waterside view. It's beautiful. I've been it personally and really enjoyed it. And you could check them out at mlcruisesbermuda.com. And also, if you want to get your swag on, you could check out Just for Kicks, and you can hit them up on orders.j4k@gmail.com.
Perfect. 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 Thanks to our sponsors. Andrew, you want to let people know a little bit about what Pax does and who he really is?
Yeah, first of all,
I'm getting some feedback. All right, let's see if we can turn that down a bit.
Are you still getting some feedback?
Yeah, hopefully that's better. So, I think someone had on the background. Now it seems a little bit better. But yes, Pax started on the trading floor. Sorry, guys, I'm getting TikTok here. What a start. But anyway, yeah, Pax started to run on the trading floor of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, CME, in 1988. Yeah, he must generate generation wealth by he's 33, making multi millions in trading profits. However, in 2011, with the collapse of the FX global, lost the house nearly overnight. We then forced him to discover how to support his family and share with us successfully how he shifts his trade from the floor to the screens. So really looking forward to this one, guys.
Pax, thank you so much for joining us. You are one of my heroes, one of the best traders I follow, and really happy to have you on our show.
Thank you, Mandela. I'm one of your heroes, man. I hope you find better heroes. I like we were talking about before we started, I love doing what I do. I love trading. I love talking about trading, and I love talking to younger traders. I love talking about it. So anyway, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Great to have you on. So let's get started. Can you tell us a little bit about your life before trading, and then how did you first get interested in trading?
So it seems to me like I didn't have much of a life before trading. I started at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange right after high school. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't want to go to college. College wasn't my thing. Wasn't a real academically inclined high school student. So I was driving a truck for my uncle on the south side of Chicago in the back of the Yards neighborhood. And my father had found out that's all I was doing. I told him I was going to school, but he found out I wasn't. So he told me to find something, become a cop or a fireman, or join a trade. I'm the least handy man in the history of men. I can't, my, I've got five kids and my wife would put together the toys for Christmas. I can't do anything like that. Just not how my brain works. So I knew a guy who had grown up in the same neighborhood I did, a guy named Pat Gironda, went to the same high school I went to, that started around high school at the Chicago Board of Options Exchange. And he, in his mid-20s, was a millionaire. So I thought, I'm going to go do what Pat Gironda is doing. And I had one of my best friends that got me a job as a runner. I started in 1988 as a runner at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, making $80 a week, minimum wage. I didn't take that minimum wage job to earn money. I took that minimum wage job to see if that was for me. And I'll tell you, Mandela, when I walked onto the trading floor, that energy was, you know, it was pulsating. You can feel it. You know, it was a quiet day too. It was after the crash of 87, and I came into the S&P pit. And it was very dead. It was very quiet. But I knew whatever was going on down there. I knew I was, you know, like an old shoe. It just fit. And I knew that whatever was happening there, I wanted to be a part of it. I learned how to clerk very quickly. I learned how to hold a deck, which is, you know, the paper orders. You would call, if you were off the floor trader, a small one, you would call a desk. You would, they would write up an order on a piece of paper, give it to a runner. The runner would run it into the corresponding pit to the broker, or to the pit with the corresponding broker. So I learned how to hold those paper orders. And then I learned how to do the hand signals, you know, that you would see on TV or in movies, I guess, to take orders. Quote markets by hand signals. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 20, 30. So I learned how to do those things. Quote, and I got a job in the Eurodollar pit, quoting the market. 7 bid at 8, 7 on 500, 1,000 at 8. And I would take orders that way. And I would service customers and clients that way. That gave me a good foot in the door. You know, a good clerk at that time in the late 80s, early 90s was worth their weight in gold. So it was like being in the minor leagues of baseball. I was moving up quickly. I went from make a minimum wage to 500 a week, to 700 a week, to 1,000 a week, to 1,200 a week. And I also knew something too, Mandela, is I didn't have a rich father or an uncle. I didn't know anybody on the floor when I started there. So I didn't have any clout. I didn't have any way in. I knew that I had to differentiate myself from the other 3,500 yellow jackets on the floor, the clerks. I had to stand out. If I was going to earn my shot at being a trader, which I didn't want to be a broker. I wanted to be a trader. And I knew that if I was going to earn my shot at trading, I had to be smarter, quicker, faster, stronger, and work harder than everybody else. And so I did. My brain just was perfectly suited for it. You know, I mean, I'm able to take in a lot of information really quickly and act on it decisively. And I remember things. I've got a near photographic memory, and so that helped. I can remember trades I made in 1997. I can give you the market structure and everything that went with it, too. When I was 23 years old, the broker that I worked with had told me that he was going to give me my membership. I was going to get my membership so that I can fill orders for him. I didn't want to be an order filler. And I had also had experienced the religious conversion. I was always Catholic, baptized Catholic, raised Catholic. But I had experienced a spiritual awakening, so to speak. And I told him, I can't accept this position. I need to go to the seminary. So I went to study to be a Catholic priest for 3 years. And I studied philosophy philosophy and theology with a minor in history. And then right before I was going to finish the last 4 years of study in Rome, my mother got sick with lung cancer. So I took a leave of absence and from seminary, and I went back to the Merck. Well, within a year I was married. The leave of absence became extended. I got married and I had a baby right away. And then I started trading within a couple of months of me getting married, and I made my first $500,000 within 6 months of me trading. And I was on my way to my first million by the time I was 29 years old.
Wow, that's very young. Wow.
Very young, without the foundation to be able to sustain it too.
Yeah.
I made more money in a couple of years than generations of my family made collectively.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So I mean, it sounds like you moved very quickly. I want to take a quick step back, Max, and I just want to ask you if there's someone, let's say there's someone who's just stumbled across this interview. They're curious about investing. They haven't traded before. They haven't really met anyone who trades. What sort of things would you say to them who are able to make it to this point in the interview in terms of, you know, what does it take and what should they do to kind of learn more about investing?
This is a journey, you know. Trading is a real journey. It's not a straight line. It's not a straight slope progression. You know, sometimes we go up and down and up and down and up and down. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. I made generational life-changing money by the time I was 33 years old. I mean, 34 years old. I got divorced and I was married to my first wife, and I were married 6 years, and we had two kids, two beautiful children, and I got divorced, and I had to recreate myself. Business changed at that point. You know, I tweet a lot about, you and I were talking a little bit more in detail offline, but I tweet a lot about traders that I know that were worth 10 million, 20 million, 30 million that had gone broke. And inevitably, I always get the same sort of responses is, not me. Nah, that won't happen to me. I'll make that kind of money and I'll disappear. Yeah, we all thought that. But, you know, I'll invest in long-term T-bills. I did too. I did it all. But life changes. Relationship changes. People get sick. People die. Business changes. The world changes. When that happens, you need to make sure that you've got the spiritual foundation necessary in order to be able to sustain yourself through the storms that life brings, because life will bring storms. So realize that, to the new trader, realize that this is a journey and it's a marathon. You don't have to have it all figured out right away. You know, take your time. Mickey Hoffman, who was one of my great mentors, I've had three great mentors, Mickey Hoffman, Judd Hirschberg, and Ira Harris. Mickey Hoffman had something called the University of Trading, which was, you know, like a mock trading session for those of us on the floor, like the simulator, only, you know, for the floor. He taught 6,600 traders. And one of the things that he had said to all of us as we came in through groups is, if you break even your first year trading, you're ahead of the game. If you break even your second year trading, you might be onto something. If you break even your third year trading, you can consider yourself a trader. Break even for a year, I didn't have that luxury. I had a wife and a baby, and I was bartending at night, six nights a week. I was so tired, I was putting my underwear on backwards. My ex-wife had her master's degree, and she's working at the Gap folding clothes. You know, I didn't have a year. I needed to make it happen. And then fast forward to 10 years later, 12 years later, on the screens, when I finally blew up in 2012, I had five kids, married with three little babies. My older kids were teenagers. I didn't have a year or 2 years to break even on the screens. Again, I had to figure it out quickly. But I had something on the screens that most traders didn't have, and that's an intimate knowledge of how market moves, because I used to move them on the floor. I know what it means. So to the young traders out there, take your time. Learn how to break even. Here's another point to think about maybe too, Mandela, is there's four lanes of traders, right? There's the trader that's consistently losing money. There's the break even trader, number two. Number three is there's a slightly profitable. Number four is the ultimately profitable traders. Ultimately profitable means $500,000 to, you know, more. And I'm talking about independent traders, not institutional. So, Now take that a step further. There's only two parts to every trade: managing risk and managing profit. The first two lanes, the trader that is consistently losing money doesn't learn how to manage their risk. But with time and effort and investment, they learn how to be break-even traders. Break-even traders learn how to manage their risk. Then you move into the next phase of managing your profit. Learning how to manage your profit, I think, is the most important aspect of trading, because it is what ultimately keeps us here and keeps us going. And that's the second, the third and the fourth lane of traders. The traders that are consistently profitable learn how to manage their risk. They learn how to manage their profit. The traders that are ultimately profitable learn how to use their profit to make more, to exploit their profit. Most traders are gonna add to losers. You know, they're gonna average in a loss. Tudor Jones has a saying that only losers average losers, and it's a great line. Great traders that are among the 1-3% of traders that actually make it in this business, never add to losses. They add to profitable trades, and that's not easy to do. It takes real courage to know how to add to a profitable trade. Anybody can add to a loss, but only a great trader is going to learn how to exploit their profit and add to a profitable trade. So take your time learning how to shift gears and move between these lanes. You know, you can go from a consistently losing trader to a small profitable trader back and forth pretty quickly. But once you learn how to properly manage your risk and to use your profit to make more, then you're going to continue to be profitable.
What sort of things go through your mind, and what are you looking at, looking for that first, you know, 5 minutes or 30 minutes in the market open?
Well, I think it's, the markets are only doing one of three things. Every day, you know, we're either going higher, lower, or nowhere. If we're going higher, I want to be long. If we're going lower, I want to be short. If we're going nowhere, I'm going to be flat. That's it. And when I started on the screens in 2013 in earnest, I mean, I traded on the screens on and off for many years, but not well. When I started trading on the screens to make a living and to try to figure out how to feed my family again after MF Global and after I blew up afterwards, I needed to find a way that was going to be of trading that was consistent, repeatable, and scalable. So I needed to make money consistently. And my only goal at the end of the day was to be positive, $50, $100, whatever, $200. That was it. Because I knew that if I was consistently profitable, if I made $50, I knew that $50 would be $5,000. I knew that $5,000 would be $50,000. I knew that $50,000 would be $100,000. And it has been all those things. But the only way that it would become that kind of money for me was to learn how to be consistently positive. And I had to develop a way of trading that was going to give me that consistency and that it was repeatable. I can do it day in and day out all the time. So consistent, repeatable, scalable. I also needed everybody worries about their stats and, you know, what your win loss, whatever is, or what your RR is. Somebody asked me what my RR was when I first started tweeting in 2018, 19. I had to look it up. I had to Google it. I had no idea what it was. I just didn't know that, you know, obviously risk reward. I knew that, but I didn't know what it was, you know, when you look at it.
Yeah.
But to me, you know, and those things are important. But to me, the most important aspect of trading is how you go big, go small, or not at all. How you increase your size, decrease your size, and decide not to trade. So I needed the process that was consistent. I needed to be green every day, and it needed to be repeatable. And I need to be able to scale up and scale down. I'm looking every trade. I'm looking for the opportunity to increase my size, decrease my size, or not trade every trade. So I sat down on my screens and thought, okay, now what worked for me on the floor? I was a really, really big NASDAQ trader in the NASDAQ pit. I can move the markets. People wanted to know what I was doing. People would ask what I was doing. Banks would ask. So I would trade the opening range breakouts. The NASDAQ in those days was good. I traded the NASDAQ primarily for a long time. The NASDAQ on the floor from 1998 to 2007 was good for 10, 20 points every breakout. We were $100 a tick when I started. Imagine that. The NASDAQ was $100 a tick. Now with the micros, it's $1 a tick. Anyway, when I started on the screens, I stopped trading NASDAQ primarily and started to trade S&P because the S&P was more manageable from the opening range. So I started to trade the opening range breakouts again with the only goal to be green. Started to trade one lots in and out, small. Break out of the opening range, get long one. So if the opening range is 45 to 41, I'd buy 45s. And I'd put my stop someplace inside the opening range so I wouldn't get hurt. I started to make a little bit of money here and there. And then I started to do my targets. So another thing that most people don't I think understand or think about very often is I traded up to 10,000 big NASDAQ a day and, more minis a day for my own accounts. And I didn't look at a chart during the day. I didn't have access to charts. If I wanted to look at a chart, I had to walk out of the pit, go stand in line at what we call the CQG machine. And, hopefully there wasn't a line. If there was a line, I'd have to wait in it. Usually, if I actually went to go stand at a chart, people would let me go, or CQG machine, people would let me at the front of the line. But, I had to walk out of the pit to go find a chart. Who's looking at charts during the day? So I was taught very early on by one of my mentors to write my plan down, to write the prices down that I want to trade. So the time for me to look at charts is before the market opens and after the market closes. I don't look at charts during the trading day. I do, but I don't make trading decisions based off of charts. I'm not looking at a 1 minute, 5 minute, 30 minute. The market's going higher, lower, or nowhere. So if it's going higher, I want to be long. Mandela, if I'm talking too much, just bring me back.
You're good. You're good, Pax. Keep going.
On the floor, when I was a small trader, I quickly learned who the big traders were, and I just went along with them. If they started to buy, well, I was looking for a one lot or a two lot to buy. And I wanted to stay out of their way. And I wanted to help them along the way. If they were bidding halves and doubles and 60s, I'd buy the one lots and two lots on the way up. And then I became 5 lot trader, 10 lot trader. Then I became one of them. So when I became bigger, as big or bigger than them, everybody else, all the smaller traders just wanted to go along with me. They didn't want to stand in my way because I'd run them over. If they were, half on 100, one at double. Nobody wanted to do that unless it was paper. Because if I was bidding half, chances are I'd be buying 60s. I didn't care about the particular price. I cared about the quantity. I needed a certain number. So I didn't care if I bought 50s or 60s on a 10 lot that was $10,000 every 10 points, but I didn't so much care about that. And I cared about the number. That's when we had these huge ranges. Anyway, so I created I didn't have direct access to charts, but I had direct access to price and I helped create that movement. Off the floor traders needed to kind of guess where the market was going to be in 5 minutes or 10 minutes, however long it took them to get their orders filled, in some cases longer. So they needed to develop technical ways of looking at the market. They had direct access to charts, but not direct access to price. We had direct access to price, and we moved price, and we controlled price. Okay, so on the screens, I wanted to be able to make that work for me, trading small, and not get run over by the algorithms. The algorithms became the new entity that we used to be, that I move the market, the algos move the market now. I could paint the tape, the algos paint the tape now. The only difference between what the algorithms do now and what we did on the floor is we were designed to move market and create profit, but we are also designed, the local trader was, designed to absorb risk. Algorithms are not designed to absorb risk. They just create profit and paint the tape. So I wanted to trade with the algos and not against them. So if I'm sure you've been trading the opening range long enough to know that the algorithms are using the exact same entry prices as you are. The difficulty now is that they can trade at the speed of light or quicker than the speed of light. I can't. What I see on the domes is already kind of, that's old information. That's lagging information. I want to use real-time information to make real-time trading decisions. But I'm not a speed scalper. So I'm trying to initiate my trades at the same levels that the algorithms are that move the markets. So I need to make sure that I've got another saying. If it isn't easy, I don't want it. Easy meaning if the opening range is 45 to 41, I'm going to be long at 45. And if it goes inside that opening range, I'm out. So I'll buy 45s. If it's 45 offer, out. If I buy, so I'll take a tick or two tick expense. I'll do that twice before I cut my size, give myself two more attempts. Okay, so if I buy 45s, it goes 45 fat bid, 46 bid, scratch stop. I get 1 point of protection from the market. I'm going to put in a scratch stop. I'm not going to turn a 1 point profitable trade into a loss. Then I will sell a quarter of my unit. If I'm trading a four lot, I don't trade four lots, but if I'm trading a four lot, I'll sell one at what I call the pain line, 4 points in the S&P. That removes my risk. So if I can't get 4 points, I don't want the trade. If I can get four, if I cannot pay for my trade with 4 points, then I'm going to get out either for a scratch or a small expense. And I'm not going to do that more than 2, 3 times, 4 times before I stop trading altogether and wait for the pay line or wait for my first target. So I buy 4 at 45. I'm going to sell 1 at 49. And then my first target will be, you know, wherever it is, 60. So now between, I'm gonna stay out of the way of the market. I've removed my risk. So the market is gonna do literally, it's literally all the time, it's gonna do one of two things. It's gonna come down and scratch me out, in which case I've locked in 200 points out of one lot, or it's gonna continue to rally, in which case I'm gonna take 10, 12, 15 points on another one lot and still be long half my unit. So if I'm trading a 16 lot, by the time the market gets to the first target, you know, I'm up $8,000, $9,000, $10,000. And what's the risk that I have? 1200?
Yeah.
You know, 800 on the, you know, if it's a tick or two ticks, a couple of $100. If I'm trading a four lot, if I'm trading a four lot, my risk should not, okay, here's another thing. If I'm trading, just keep it this way. If I'm trading a four lot, my expenses should never exceed, remember, I don't lose money. I spend money. Talked about that this weekend and get all kinds of crazy responses. And trading is not gambling, it's a business. So if I'm trading a four lot, we come out of the opening range, my expenses, market expenses, not losses, but expenses should never exceed what I can make at the pay line. And that's $200 a one lot. So my expenses should never, ever be more than $800, ever. Okay. If my expenses are more than if my expenses are more than what I can clean up on a full unit when the market gets to the pay line, then I'm over trading. I got to stop trading. I need to shut it down and take my $800 expense and come back tomorrow. Because maybe tomorrow we come out of the opening range on the first attempt. We go blowing through the pay line. I add at the pay line. We get to the first target. I take profit on a double unit. The market runs through there. And I got, you know, I started off with a four lot. I got 12 on, you know, because I've added all the way along. The whole idea is to start small and to size up along the way.
All right. I think you covered a lot of stuff there, Pax, and I'm with you on that. I did see on X there was a lot of blowback or a lot of feedback, but I get it. I think it's about minimizing risk every time. It's about paying for your trade every time. It's about not letting it go against you, and it's about adding and knowing when to put the pedal to the metal when it's going with you. And when you have a trend day or you have a big move out of the opening range, you got to maximize that. You mentioned quite a few terms, and I don't want to move forward before we kind of cover some of those. So I'll do expenses, paying for trades, scratches, and pay lines. Can you kind of give a quick definition of each one?
Okay. So expenses, how best to explain this? So if I lose money, by definition, I'm a loser. You know, I need to be very careful in the language that I use and and the way that I talk to myself and about myself. You know, for a while, if you were able to get into my mind after I had blown up after MF Global October of 11 to 2012, if you can get into my mind, man, I had no confidence and all I mean, I didn't feel real good about myself, right? I mean, we sold our house, had to move back to my dad's house. I was driving Uber. It was not a good time. Uber just came to Chicago. It was, you know, not a good time. My wife and I were I got my first check back from MF Global. It was $80,000. And we rented a house in Key Biscayne, Florida with that money, like two hillbillies. We went down to Key Biscayne and rented a house. Now what? I knew I was getting more money back, but now what? You know, now do I go to law school? I'm 40 years old, 44 years old. Do I go to law school? Do I go back to school and become a therapist? What do I do? Her words to me were, I believe in you. My wife was a clerk on the floor. That's where we met. I believe in you. You were king of the NASDAQ when I met you. I know you can do it again. You just have to go figure it out. So that was enough for me to be able to continue on that. And I still believed in God, despite the fact that I couldn't feel God's presence in my life yet. I knew that God loved me, that there was a God and that God loved me. And so I just needed to kind of push through that. So I'm not a loser. If I lose money, I'm not a loser. I don't win money either. There's no winning and there's no losing. This isn't a game. It's not a game of chance. It's this, you know, this is just not a game. This is a business. So every day I'm going to allocate a certain amount of money in order to be able to make a lot more money. So going back to the four lot example, my expenses, my market losses, right? I don't lose money. Oh, another thing, losers chase money. Okay. Yeah. I lost money. I got to make my money back. When I spend money, it's a business expense. It's in the past. I leave it there. And then I look forward. I'm forward looking to the next trade. What's that next trade going to give me? How much money am I willing to spend to find the momentum of the market? How much money am I willing to spend to find the momentum of the market? What market drivers do we have? What numbers do we have? What earnings do we have? What is going to move the market today? Nothing? Well, I'm not willing to spend any money. There are a lot of times, Mandela, this year, since I spent the first 2 weeks of the year in Cancun, Mexico, with my wife and kids and other family members. So there have been 4 days since I've been back in the last month where I've actually had decent days. Everything else has been, and I told the traders in my group, I'm not willing to spend any money today. I'll take the first couple of attempts out. If it's easy, I'll take it. If it's not, forget it. I'll wait for the pay line, which we'll get into a second. I'll wait for a target. You know, I'll wait for something. I am not going to spend any money today. If I buy 45s, that market's got to go 46 bid or I'm out.
Yeah.
Just because the market wasn't going to move anything, we weren't going to do anything. And, you know, so I'm not willing to spend any money in it. Business expenses. I'm willing to allocate a certain amount of money every single day in order to be able to find the momentum of the market. And if I can't, then I'll wait. Anybody who's been around for a while should see a trade happen where they know this is going to work. Yeah. I got something here, you know, so I'll wait for that. And I've been around long enough and I know how markets move, you know, clearly enough to wait for that move to where I can just, you know, take it if I see something. I'll be sitting there doing some mentoring or talking to somebody and watching the market, and I'll tell them I'm getting long here, you know, and then I catch another 10, 20 points out of it. It's not the opening range. It's not a target. I just see the market starting to move and I want to jump on board. So I'm willing to allocate some money or I'm not willing to allocate some money, period. You know, I'm willing to spend some, or I'm not willing to spend some, just like any other business. And I have to have an idea as to what I can make. So now the pay lines, which kind of flow, you know, into this from where we're talking about with expenses. When I sat down in the screens in 2013, consistent, repeatable, scalable, I wanted to figure out where the market, where the algorithms were taking the market before they decided to expand the range. Is it 2 points? Is it 4 points? And I'm talking about the S&P. 2 points, 4 points, 8 points, 6 points. What is it? You know, the markets like to move in even numbers. Quarter, you know, crude moves in quarters. So anyway, I'm looking at 2 points, and that's not enough. They're blowing through that. So where are the algorithms trying to – the pay lines become, what I call the pay lines, become a form of intraday support and resistance. So I started to notice that it becomes 4 points in the S&P, and then it transferred over into every other market as $200 a one lot. When you know that your P&L is at $200, that's the pay line. Crude is 20 cents. NASDAQ is 10 points. Russell is 4 points. So it's the same thing, $200 a one lot. I don't trade Russell anymore. I shouldn't talk about Russell. I haven't traded Russell in years. But I started to notice that the algorithms are taking, and look for this and tell me if I'm not crazy. It's you know, anecdotal and it's experiential, but you know, I figured it out from my own experience. But take a look at it and tell me if you don't see the market heading to this 4 point pay line area before the market decides to extend up to the first target, which would be, you know, depending on the market, you know, who knows. Like right now, the S&P is at 45.25. So the first target would be 40. The S&P is at 50.25. I'm dyslexic. I got to put the numbers in my mind. So the S&P is trading at 50.25. The first target would be 50.38. So if I get long at 50.25, I'm going to pay for it at 50.29, sell one. And if the market goes 50.29 bid, then I put in an offer at 50.38, and I put my feet up. And as Lionel Richie and the Commodore saying, it's easy like Sunday morning.
Scratches. So scratches, is there a difference between scratches and break even?
Yes. Scratches, you know, entry stops. I should talk about this more on Twitter or on X. So if I buy 25s, I sell 25s, that's a scratch. Once I pay for my trade, then I'm going to use a break even stop. So I buy 25s. I pay for my trade at 29. The market goes 29 bid, 30 bid, but there's no momentum. There's no volume to push it up, you know, farther. So it kind of comes back down, and the algorithms are doing the same thing all the time. They're searching for momentum. If they can't rally the market, they're going to bring it back into the opening range and try to break it. If they bring it back down to the opening range and I paid for my trade, I'm going to use a break-even stop. So if I locked in profit, if I locked in $200 worth of profit, I'm going to use that $200 for my stop. So my stop will be, you know, a point inside the opening range, depending on what size I have, or a half a point, you know. So I use two ticks. What we've been seeing a lot in these markets is we'll get the breakout above the opening range, get to the pay line, pay for our trade, and the market will come back down to the opening range and tick you out. So it'll trade 25. I get stopped out. It's 29 bid, 30 bid, 35 bid, 40 bid. Well, I got stopped out, you know, for a scratch. The market never got back inside the opening range. It just ticked there. It just traded there. The only thing that got ticked out were the traders in my group, because we got 12 stops in. So we, you know, we use break even stops in that case.
I have seen that, Pax. I've seen like more times than I thought was possible where it breaks out. It's almost like a head fake, like a basketball head fake. It gets everybody to commit, and then it comes back right in and it ticks. And then that's the second move is always the real move.
Right. So pay for your trade. So Mandela, pay for your trade.
Yep.
And then the market comes back down. Move your stop from scratch. So you buy 25s, it goes 26 bids. Scratch stop it, right? Yeah. So, you know, if it trades, okay. So then you pay for the trade at 29. It comes back down to 25. Your stop's in at 24, 24 and a half. Okay, gotcha. So you're going to use that money you locked in as trading capital. Business. It's a business.
Yes, now, it's a business. It's right. A business.
Here we go. I'm not winning money. I'm making money.
I did have a question. I know you mentor a lot of successful traders. What would you say to someone who is experienced, who's going through a period where they're being very hesitant? They're following their process. They're seeing the setups. They're seeing the opening range breakouts, but they're afraid to pull the trigger.
It could be something as simple as confidence. You know, when I'm not confident, then I'm going to miss trades I should take, and I'm taking trades I should miss. You know, and that's a good line. I got to tweet that out. I use that all the time.
How did you come up with that?
I don't know. It popped into my mind one day. But I take trades I should miss, and I miss trades I should take. So, and I could be suffering from a lack of confidence for a thousand reasons. Maybe fear is creeping in. You know, what am I afraid of? Did I argue with my wife? Or, you know, am I worried about one of my kids? What am I worried about? You know, so many traders are underfunded nowadays, and they have to pay their mortgage or their rent out of their trading accounts. You know, they a lot of people are losing their jobs in the States now. It's a crazy time, so they're trying to pay their rent, and they're putting themselves under tremendous pressure to make money. So that's going to start to affect their trading. You know, so ultimately, when you come down in front of the screens, you need to make sure that whatever is going on in your life, you leave at the threshold of your office. Even if you're trading, even if your trading computer is in a studio apartment, walk out of your apartment, go get a cup of coffee or a donut or something. When you walk in through the threshold of that room, you are at work, and nothing in the world matters except for the next trade in front of you, except for your process, except for what you've got going for you. And then you've got to take that trade. Especially if you're confident enough that you are not going to hurt yourself. If you're confident that you're not going to hurt yourself, then take the trade. Just don't chase and don't overtrade. Fear is something that affects all of our confidence. Whether you're afraid of losing money, you're afraid of being wrong, you're afraid of missing out. You know, I'm wrong quite often, and my wife will tell you, and the traders in my group will tell you, I can be a real asshole. but I'm quick to, and my kids will tell you too, but I'm quick to correct that. I think trading has helped me, you know, see that. Oh shit, I shouldn't have said that, or I shouldn't have done that. I'm sorry, yeah. You know, and not that I'm just sorry about what I said. I'm sorry about the behavior that led up to me saying what I said, and I'm okay in talking about that, you know, and that's in normal everyday relational life. That's the same way in my trading. And I think I learned that in my trading, you know, is okay. I took that trade. I shouldn't have. I'm sorry for taking that trade, you know, but why? What led into me taking that trade? Fear, pressure, you know, what? Lack of confidence, for what reason? You know, okay, now that if I can identify, I can deal with. If I can't identify it, then it'll still pop up in my trading and it'll still pull me away and it'll still pull me away from my process and push me into taking trades I should miss and missing trades I should take.
Next question is actually from my wife. So she's very much into the environment and, you know, trying to do good in the world with our time that we have on the earth. So her question via me is, are there any investments that are off limits for you, Pax, for any reason? Is there anything that you would never trade from a personal or from a like a moral perspective?
I don't know. Yes, there would be. I don't know what they are because I haven't really thought along those lines. Mendel, I don't venture out from what I know. I have invested in every restaurant and bar that anybody ever asked me to invest in. I have given money to everybody and anybody that's ever asked for it. And when I was broke, nobody knew my name. So my wife, everything that I do, all my trading accounts are held in corporate, are held by LLCs. There, I don't own anything. Everything is owned by corporations. And everything I do is, I do the same thing day in and day out all the time. I trade the S&P. I trade crude. Every so often I'll trade NASDAQ. And that's it. Even my investments are, you know, I'm investing in the stocks, you know, I'm investing in gold. You know, I like miners. I like some of the energy stocks and lately the semis, you know, but I'm very pro-life. You know, I'm not going to have anything to do with, I'm very pro-life. I am very Catholic in spite of, you know, the F-bombs I throw around. My trading badge is PAX. You can see it behind me. That was my badge that I had on the floor. That's how people would refer to me, PAX. And you know, if you traded with me, I would write down your acronym and you would write down my acronym, and that's how the trades were recorded. The reason I chose PAX is because it means peace in Latin, and that was in 1997 when I got my membership. Everybody else's name, you know, they had their initials or they had some derivative of their name. Like my friend, one of my best friends, Rob, was Rob. His badge was Rob. He was Rob. Other guys would be RCG. That would be their, you know, their peak. My brother Patrick was a trader. He's a Chicago policeman. My brother, sergeant in the Chicago Police Department. Pat traded for me or traded with me. I backed him, but he traded with me. His badge was PKY, Packy, nickname for Packy. You know, yeah. I wanted something that meant something that represented me in a strong way. And so I chose PAX, peace. Which is always funny when I was battling somebody or trying to choke them or punching them in the face or getting punched in the face. People, this one guy in particular, Emo, Edmund Mercatician, God rest his soul. Emo would always he would grab my badge off my jacket and shove it in my face. Remember what this means. Fuck. You fat bastard, get out of here. Then, of course, later on, I'm sorry, Emo. Yeah, you're right.
So I can feel this passion. I can feel the energy that you have. And I guess one thing I'm just wondering about is what drives you? What is it that keeps you coming every day for this market? Do you ever get bored?
Well, okay. So no, I don't ever get bored. And there's the practical aspect of it is, you know, 2013, I was completely starting over again. I didn't, you know, I've had a very successful time on the screens. It comes, part of this journey, by the way, is realizing you're not going to make money every day. This year has been off to a very quiet year. I have paid for trades. I've had some expenses. I've had like 4 days where I've had really, really good trading days. So it's kind of wading through the muck to get to the really good trades. 2016, the volatility around the election, that was great. It was my first really big series of great trades on the screens. Took me 3 years to get to that. 2017, new highs every day. You know, built runners. It became risk-free positions. That stuff built up. 2018, the volatility, the fourth quarter, it was like the old days. It was like being on the floor again. I called my wife over on Christmas Eve, December 14th. We broke from, the S&P broke from 2280 2480 down to 2316 was the low. The 200-week moving average was 2343, and I covered my shorts there. I called my wife down. I said, look, I never look at my P&L. I pulled my P&L up, and I said, look at this. We both started weeping. We were bawling. Christmas Eve, I closed out my positions. I ran downtown to Louis Vuitton, and that was a great, great Christmas. 2019, new highs again, building runners every day. 2020, forget it. That was unbelievably good. COVID was a great trade. Oh, and then 21, you know, okay. 22, great. So I got the practical aspect of it. I've got 5 kids, 2 have trust funds, 3 don't. And you know, I want to leave my family very well off financially. The more important aspect of, I don't think I don't see a period in my life where I won't trade. I, you know, like Jim Dalton, he's in his mid to late 80s and he still trades every day. Leo Melamed, if you don't know who Leo is, Google him, download his last book. Leo Melamed is the reason we are traders. Leo invented this. Leo Melamed is 92 years old, 93 years old. He took the Chicago Mercantile Exchange from a backwater butter and egg exchange, and he brought it, he kept it alive with pork bellies. The Board of Trade was the exchange. Leo brought pork bellies in the 60s, and that kept it going. And then Leo had the idea to trade financial futures and then options on currencies. In order to be able to trade financial futures on currencies, and then that led into bonds and led into indices and all the options based off of that. He had a Herculean task. He had Milton Friedman, the great Nobel, no, he didn't win it, but he, I think it was nominated for a Nobel Prize. The great Chicago economist wrote a white paper and they peddled that. Both Leo and Milton went around to the banks and they drummed up, this is after Bretton Woods failed in 1973, I think. They drummed up interest by the banks to hedge their exposure to foreign reserves or foreign currency. They, you know, to what they've got out there in foreign reserve. They now with the banks being interested in it, they had to invent the traders. So Leo invented an army of traders by giving away memberships and then selling them for a small amount of money to the already full members at the Merck. So they brought their sons in, their grandsons and their nephews, you know, not too many nieces at that time. But they brought their, you know, sharp people in. Here is a seat, go trade these new products. Then he had to change the law. He went to DC, him and Dan Rostenkowski, who was the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee at the time, was a very, very powerful guy. He was a Chicago congressman. They went and lobbied Congress and got the rules changed so that commodities could be settled in cash, which brought in, you know, it took everything from a physical delivery to a cash delivery system, which then, and then on top of that, Congress said, wait a second, who's going to regulate all of this? Well, Leo said, I'll found the regulatory body, which became the CFTC. Leo did all of that. And that's why we are all here. Whenever I saw Leo on the floor, he was chairman of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange for years. And even when we demutualized and then the CME bought the Board of Trade, CME bought NYMEX, COMEX. Every time I would see Leo, I'd say, thank you, Leo. Thank you, Leo. Eventually, I was over at his house. I became very good friends with his son, Jordan, who's a filmmaker. And he filmed a documentary about us and about I was in it. I was like one of the main subjects of it. And Leo said, why do you thank me all the time? Leo, if it wasn't for you, I'd be a cop, or a lawyer, not a lawyer, a cop, a fireman, a criminal. Who knows what would happen to me? You invented this. I live in Lake Forest in this opulent mansion. So thank you, Leo.
There you go. So what's the name of that film? I want to watch that film, Pax.
It's a movie called Futures Past. So Jordy had released it. Jordy Melamed. Leo is M-E-L-A-M-E-D, Melamed. So his son Jordy is a filmmaker, director. So Futures Past was debuted at Chicago Film Festival and LA Film Festival and all kinds of film festivals to great reviews. But then he decided to change part of it and make it more about what his father did. And it's never seen a widespread release yet. It's had, you can Google it. It's had great reviews. You can see that, you can see the trailer on it, but it just hasn't been released. It was made around the same time that Floored was made. Did you see Floored?
Yeah, I saw Floored. I watched Floored.
Garbage. No good. I knew all of those guys. I love those guys. The guys who produced it, Joe Gibbons and Steve Presnewski, great traders, great guys. I just didn't like the way that it portrayed us. It made the floor traders look like goofs, like idiots. And man, we weren't goofs.
We're coming up to time, Pax, and I'm very conscious of your time. I want to respect your time. I did want to ask you a few sort of rapid fire questions. Just kind of fun stuff. Are you up for that?
Sure, of course.
5 minutes starting now, Pax. All right, first question is, what is the kindest thing someone has ever done for you, Pax, that has helped you with your career?
Told me the truth. Mickey Hoffman, my great mentor, Mickey Hoffman, told me to retire during my divorce. You're done. You've made enough money. Leave. Mickey, I'm 34 years old. What am I going to do? Go figure it out. You're done. You'll go broke. So he told me the truth. That was the kindest thing he ever did. I should have listened to him.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. And he's a legend as well in his own right.
Yes.
All right. Next question. What's your favorite food from your favorite restaurant?
Chicken Vesuvio from Capri in Burbridge, Illinois.
All right. I got to check that out. Okay. You were talking about the floor earlier. So this is a floor one. In your opinion, Pax, what is the most bizarre hand signal in the pit? And also, what was your favorite hand signal that you enjoyed doing the most?
I don't know why this popped into my mind, but when I would check a trade, you know, so I would sell you 50 at even, and then we were busy and I'd card up all kinds of other trades. But I checked every one of my trades. When I would check my trade and the other broker would say check, that out trades were what I was afraid of blowing me up on the floor. So when the other trader checked that was always reassuring to me, and it was confidence boosting. Okay, good. That trade's good. I made that trade. He checked it with me. That's good. I don't have to worry about it. What's here now? On to the next trade. So conversely, I think the worst part would have been, what? I don't know that. I did it with him, not you. Nothing. You nothing. This was nothing. You nothing. Him filled.
Oh no.
Now I can't move on to the next trade. The only trade that matters is the next trade. Now I can't move on to the next trade. I have to rectify whatever my position was or what I thought it would be.
Okay. I get it. That's so cool. So fascinating. Okay. Next one. Time. We got about 2 minutes and 40 seconds left, Pax. What's the most profit you've ever made on a trade?
Oh, you wouldn't believe me if I told you, but I had, my worst day was $1.5 million. I ended up that was the very first trading day of 2001. I lost $1.5 million on the very first trading day of the year. Greenspan cut interest rates by 50 basis points. And on literally January 3rd, 2001, it's the biggest rally in NASDAQ history. We rallied 650 full points. That was 26%. We rallied 26% in 2 minutes. I was the only schmuck short, and I was short like 25 contracts, 25 big ones, which would have been, you know, I can't even do that math right now. And I ended up having my best year ever. It was a monster year. An eight-figure year. And I started off the year down $1.5 million. So my best day I won't talk about, but that was my worst day.
Okay. All right. If you could only trade one asset or one ticker for the second quarter of 2024, what would that one ticker be?
Oh, okay. That's a difficult question. It would be either S&P or crude. I think crude is going to have a busy second quarter. I think the S&P is going to start to pick up late second quarter, going into third and fourth quarter. We're going to see a great deal of volatility this year. It's not yet. Yeah, I tweeted about that too. I gave all of my downside targets, and those targets won't change. So I think crude maybe in the second quarter, and then going into late second quarter, third, fourth quarter, going closer to the election is going to be the S&P is going to be a wild trade.
Okay, I like that. All right, 50 seconds, Pax. If you could let me know, what do you like to do for fun? What are your most enjoyed hobbies?
I work out a lot. I lift weights. And I love spending time with my family, my kids. I love to ski. My oldest son lives in Breckenridge, Colorado, 24-year-old ski bum. I'm going to go out there and ski with him next week.
Oh, awesome. And last question, what are you looking forward to most before the end of 2024?
Volatility in the third and fourth quarter. Oh, okay. Nice. In the markets, volatility, third and fourth quarter. Hopefully, God willing, my oldest daughter getting engaged. That's what I'm looking forward to most.
Okay, beautiful. Beautiful. Well, congratulations on that, Vax. Actually, I wanted to ask you if any of our viewers wanted to get into contact with you and learn more about what you do. How could they do that?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at PaxTrader777 or X. I got to get in the habit of calling it X. Or if you're interested in you know, trading with me, I've got a small group of traders. I don't sell it and I don't market it, but you can go to my website at www.thepaxgroup.org and sign up for a 3-day trial and ask me a lot of questions when you're in there for 3 days and see if it's, you know, your home. Shoot me an email, matt@thepaxgroup.org or a DM on Twitter. I answer all of my DMs.
Okay. Awesome. And I am very, very excited, super excited that you've generously offered to give away a 30-minute free one-on-one session with you, mentorship session with you, Pax. So we really appreciate that, and we really appreciate your time with us today.
Thank you, Mandela. It was fun. It was great talking to you. You know, it's always easy for me. I've been around long enough. I've been a partner in an FCM. I've owned my own prop group. I backed more traders than I can remember, literally. I just ran into two guys that I backed last week that I forgot about. I didn't even remember the poor kid's name. It was horrible. But anyway, and I've traded with some of the best traders ever, and a lot of assholes, but some of the best traders in the history of traders. So it's not hard for me to tell who's real and who isn't, and I can tell you're the real deal. So I appreciate you. Thank you for having me on, and I wish you nothing but the best in your journey. If there's ever anything I can do for you, just let me know. Okay.
Thank you so much, Pax, and I will be taking you up on that. That's for sure.
I hope so.
Really great.
We don't fight alone, Bella. We don't fight alone unless we choose to.
Yeah, I'm choosing to fight with you and fight together.
Me too.
Thanks, Pax.
Thank you, Manila.
Wow.
First of all, I'm just glad I'm over the sound trouble. So Mandela, apologies at the beginning of the show, but I was getting feedback from both sides. It's as if we had had a few windows open. But yeah, wow, one interview, guys. That was really, really good. Really enjoyed that. And I think that's our first ever trader from the pit, right? You know, someone who's actually worked on the floor.
Yep, it is.
Definitely the one with the most experience. Definitely. I was so intrigued on, you know, life on the pit. Never really had much exposure. I know there was movies and stuff that really sort of highlighted, you know, but I haven't really, you know, it's better to hear like from the horse's mouth, to say to speak, you know. But wow, yeah, wealth of knowledge, great fire.
Yeah. So some of his story was like a real life, like Wolf of Wall Street as well, right? You know, yeah, working in the pit, you know, went through a financial crash, like lost $1.5 million in a day, in the morning, and then, you know, went on to earn like, what, 8 figures in a year. So unbelievable. And yeah, I'll definitely be reaching out to Pax as well. I'd like to have a chat with him. And yeah, it'd be good if we can get him back on the show sometime as well, maybe in the third or fourth quarter. I think, you know, there will be a lot of volatility. We've got some elections coming up in the US, which is going to move some prices. So yeah, I'm really looking forward.
Yeah, I think he was one of the biggest guests up until now to get. And I'm really glad that we were able to have him on the show. There are a lot of things that he covered as well. So one of the things that stands out is he doesn't look at charts, which is something that I think we put a focus on charts, where Pax is used to being in the pit, not looking at charts. So he's looking at depth of market, which is DOM or DOMS. So he's just looking at the price, and it's just a different style, a different way to look at things. But what did you guys, like, was there anything in particular that you guys took from the interview? Anything in particular that you think kind of stands out a little bit more than
Yeah, so for myself, I would say is like the level of maturity or psychology as well. So when we were talking figures, it was that. It was just literally numbers, right? Yeah, you know, if I lost that sort of money or a fraction of that money in the morning, though, you probably wouldn't see me for a couple of weeks. Yeah, but Pac's just there, and he's just quoting numbers. You can see that his psychology is very, very cool, you know, in what he does, and you know, his experience shines through. You can see that quite clearly. So it's really good.
Yeah, he did a great job. One thing I do want to mention is the one thing that stood out for me was when he was talking about the four lanes of traders. So that for me was, I think, just life-changing. So he talked about how there is the break-even trader. So the break-even trader is kind of like in the middle, where you're making money some days, not making money some other days. And then at the opposite end of the scale, he talked about the consistently losing trader. And then after the break-even trader is the consistently profitable. So you're just about making enough. And then the final one is the ultimately profitable. And he mentioned how you can kind of shift between the different lanes, the different zones at different times in your journey. And I had never really thought about it in that way, but being able to kind of think about it and say, okay, right now I'm in a period of break even. And the last, you know, few weeks I've been kind of breaking even here and there. I thought was really, really helpful.
Yeah, he had a lot of gems, and I think, you know, for myself, I'm definitely going to want to watch it over again. But it was a few things that I wrote them down. But it was a few things that I really valued on what he had said. It was obvious that his passion about trading, you know, this guy's lived it, seeing the evolution of it. Kind of wish I was able to be in the interview, because from hearing him speak, I have loads of questions on, you know, just his knowledge of the development of technology, you know, because he had, you know, like you said, he doesn't use charts or anything like that. And he had his witness, you know, the evolution of the sort of trading experience for traders. But one of the things that I really wanted to highlight was his mindset and the power of speech for your, you know, your subconscious mind. You know, we all take in programs daily. But one of the things that I noticed that he had done, which probably helps with his mental health as well, where he doesn't call them losses, or, you know, when you keep telling yourself losses is a negative input to your subconscious, you know, it's just an expense. So it's like it has a purpose, you know, and him doing that, I'm sure, helped with his sort of, you know, mental health. You know, I'm not beating myself down. I'm taking losses. You know what I mean? It's just expenses. And, you know, the confidence would still remain to, you know, carry on his trades and his system for another day if it was a, you know, an expensive day, you know. But it was a lot of gems that Pax had mentioned, and he's definitely got a new follower in me. A great find again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I like the expense as well, PJ, because every business has an expense. If you have a t-shirt business, you have a signage business, you have a restaurant, you're gonna be expensing things or buying things. And certain days, Pac says he doesn't want to spend any money. Certain days he does. So it's, I think, a good way, a positive way to look at trading and to almost accept the losses as part of the business expense, I think, is very important.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, P. And from tomorrow when the market opens, that's where I'll be looking at it now. So I'll be having losing days, having business expenses, right? So no, it's brilliant, you know. Yeah, but you can tell, you know, the psychology and the mindset is absolutely spot on. Like you say, things like expenses, absolutely not phased by having a loss or having an expense. Yeah, it's just, you know, really just, yeah, it's part and parcel of the game, right? So would be great if we could get Pax on and the three of us actually do the interview. I think I was away. P was pushed for time, so Mandela was in the hot seat. So lucky you. Yeah, but it'd be great if we could get Pax on maybe into our third quarter when things start to hot up a little bit. So it'd be really good.
Yeah, absolutely. He was a joy to communicate with.
and very understanding. He's very down to earth as well. Like he's a genuine, like I think we were talking in our group and saying like he's just a genuine guy. You know, he's had successes, he's had hardships, as everyone does. But I'll be happy to get him back on for sure.
Yeah, that's one thing about like a lot of the traders we've interviewed. You know, I do notice that pattern where they all seem to have hit rock bottom, and then from that rock bottom they've risen up right here to the heights of being a really successful trader. So I just suppose that's some motivation for our listeners and people in the chat. You know, no matter how tough times get, you know, things can get better, right?
Yeah, I'm very glad that you said that as a Manchester United supporter. I'm very, very glad that you said that, because sometimes as an Arsenal supporter, we think about last season and we think about what happened last season. I see your headphones are going off and you chuck them in the bin. All I'm going to say is it applies to all things in life. It doesn't just apply to trading. It applies to football. It applies to your job. It applies to your family. You know, there are going to be tough times, but you gotta push through and keep pushing. That's all.
It's really good. So I don't want to read through some of the comments. I think we got some starred comments in on Super Chat.
Yes,
so I can see how regular Paul Thomas. So he's dropped in. Fair play to Paul. He's dropped in some coffee money for us boys. Yeah, he's dropped $1.99. So thanks, Paul. Paul's saying he really enjoyed this show and he's hoping we can get back. So we're looking forward to the draws as well. So I know majority of the chat that actually did enter hashtag SFX and hashtag PAX as well. So yeah, I don't know when you want to do that, Mandela.
Let's do it now. I think we just go for it now. I think we do the prize giveaway. So thank you for your patience, everyone. It's time to give away a prize to one or two or three lucky viewers. So we're going to go with, let's see here. Okay. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to do a live draw for one lucky person. And that lucky person is going to be able to receive the three things we're going to give away. The first one is a one-on-one session with Pax. The second one is going to be some SFX swag. And then the third one is going to be, for someone in Bermuda, a exclusive spa treatment at Orchid Spa. So let's get over to that now. Let's see here. And of course, because we're live, here we go. Okay. Can you see my screen?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, let's go. So this is for the PAX interview. Sorry, the PAX one-on-one session. And the winner with PAX... one-on-one with Pax is going to be
no.
we'll do it again.
I can't believe we entered into the competition. You can't do that.
I was tempted to do it myself, yeah. To be honest.
That would have been yours, PJ. That would have been all you, man. Yeah. Let's draw again. Here we go. Alright, here we go. So this is a one-on-one session with Pax, exclusive. Pick his brain. And it's for Jerry Soltis. Congratulations, well done, Jerry. Let's get some confetti going on up in here. Jerry Soltis is he's a very good friend.
No,
we got some confetti coming on. Yeah, here we go. Yeah, well done, Jerry. So Jerry will get you hooked up with Pax, and you can pick his brain and use your time wisely. All right, next one, is SFX. So this is going to be for some swag.
Okay.
So we got, let's see what we got here. We have a Signature FX hat. We have a Signature FX towel.
Jerry's happy.
Jerry's happy.
Congratulations, Jerry. Yeah, he's in the chat. Well done.
Yeah, well done, Jerry. Congratulations, Jerry. And then a lunch bag, Signature FX for the next person. Let's do a draw here. This is purely random. So if you're in Bermuda, outside Bermuda, you will receive a care package from Signature FX. And the winner is, oh my gosh.
FX. So
there's a glitch. I feel like the AI is not working well today. I don't even remember entering.
Yeah, we can't enter our own competitions. Can we?
They say AI is the next thing, but I don't know. I'm not convinced. AI might not be as smart as we think it is. All right, so Paul Thomas, there we go.
Well,
Paul
Thomas
will get the cure package. The amount of slack he gives us.
Yeah.
All right, last but not least, the next prize would be for someone who's in Bermuda who will receive a free Orchid Nail Spa treatment courtesy of Orchid Spa. And the winner is Denise Dowling.
Well done. Well done, Denise.
Congratulations, Denise.
Well done. I was expecting signature FX again.
Yes.
Fub might not have reset that one.
Yeah. So just to yeah, just to say, if you want to get in touch with PAX, it's theparksgroup.org. So congratulations to our winner there. Just want to give a shout out for Just for Kicks. So please get in contact with them for any of this swag and to Orchid Nail Spa Bermuda. So thanks for your sponsorship. Thanks for the prizes. Much appreciated.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So thank you for everyone who's watching. We are available. So for those of you who don't want to see our beautiful graphics and you don't want to see our amazing looks, you can watch us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. We're also available on Amazon, Audible. And then for those of you who are listening to us verbally, you can watch us on YouTube for all of our beautiful faces. Make sure you check us out.
Yeah, it's been a good show. We need to plan the next show a bit sooner. You can tell we've been off air for a couple of months. I'm a little bit rusty myself. Can't get my words out. My tech wasn't working at the beginning of the show. So it's been a bit of a, bit of a nightmare for myself today. Yeah. But no, it was a great show. Great interview. Really enjoyed that. Looking forward to watching it back. And yeah, hopefully we can get PAX back on sometime. Definitely around the election time, I think, would be great. We should see some good volatility in the market then. You know, and maybe it'd be good maybe to get PAX's input and suggestions of how the market moves around the elections as well. I'd be quite interested to hear his, you know, political market moves, you know, how it works. I'm sure he's, you know, experienced many elections there, so it'd be really good.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm very, very excited to see what happens for the rest of this year. And I think we're very well placed. And thank you. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, PJ, for all of the hard work that you do as well for the show to bring this out to the people. I think the reason behind this, the purpose that we do this is to try and share the knowledge and try and share some info. So thanks to you both.
Yeah, no problem, man. And yeah, just circling back with our guests, you know, and Andrew's last comment with the political sort of great, you know, elections and stuff that we hear and the volatility, you know, looking at how he remembers moving averages and market structure from years and years back, like, you know what I mean? Like, he definitely would be the perfect person to sort of like pick his brains, you know, or stay close on his, you know, X feed and stuff to see his thoughts, you know, because that guy, you know, you can't get, you know, better than that from somebody who's watched the evolution of, you know, trading, right? So
yeah he's seen so many things. I feel like he's seen it all already.
I'd like to get his input on retail traders and influencers as well, because I can imagine he's got some words to say as right. So yeah, be great to get him back on if we can. But no, good show, guys. Great prizes. You know, thanks for having me. Sorry I messed up the beginning. But,
no worries, man. Things happen.
All good. I don't know if it was you or if it was me, but I think we made up for it with the guest and the quality and the gems.
Yeah.
Hopefully. But yeah, thank you guys, and we got to do more of these shows, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. It's been too long, you know. We were on a good run, maybe like once a month or something, but I think we've taken it easy, you know, since Christmas, right? It's time to get back on. So guys, I'm gonna make a move, so have a great weekend and I'll speak to you both in a week.
Cool,
take care, both. Thanks, boy.
Take it easy.
Bye. Later,
peace. Bye.
Peace.
All right, PJ.
Everything's all right.
That's a show. I think that's a wrap.
Okay.
Yeah, it's nice to connect with you. I know we were supposed to connect this week. We were supposed to be able to do a couple things earlier this week, and stuff got in the way.
Yeah, I could talk about that with her.
Yeah, for sure.
I had a rough one.
I know, and stuff like that happens, man. But I am glad that we were able to get the show out and give a little bit of info from PAX. I do want to just say thank you to PAX for his inspiration, his energy, and having him on the show, I think for me was definitely a highlight. He's one of the traders that have revolutionized and improved my trading. Personally, I like the opening range. It's simple. And he was the one that introduced me to it. So yeah. I just wanted to say a special thanks to PAX as well for doing that.
Yeah, he seemed like a great guest. And, his passion, shined in the way he spoke. You thought you knew a bit of trading, from, however long our journey's been. But then this guy starts talking in Chinese to us, and you know what I mean? All these signals, and
like Chinese.
Yeah, it's a different language. It seemed like he was speaking, but definitely want to watch it again and bring myself up to speed to better understand a lot of the gems that he was sharing.
Yeah.
Definitely. I'm definitely gonna look up this guy Leo Malamud and the Futures Past movie. It seems like that could be a nice insight to see, the evolution of investing or trading or the platforms that help facilitate it. But yeah, man, it's definitely one of my favorite guests so far.
Yeah, thank you, P. Thank you for all that you do, and thanks for all that you continue to do. We got to do a few more shows coming up between now and the end of summer, but I think we're starting off the year right, first show of the year, and great guest, great conversations, great. Also, thank you again to our viewers, everybody that has made some time to kick it with us today on March 9th, to kind of share their insights. We really appreciate your time and your energy in the live chat and being able to watch it with us. And then also, as you know, PJ, you want to give one more thank you to our sponsors?
Yes.
One last sponsor thank you.
Yes, most definitely. So we had, we have Orchid Nail Spa. If you're here in Bermuda and you have any sort of nail or feet treatment, that they'll hook you up. And that's, a great place to go. And, Mona Lisa tour is one of my favorite, seeing the island from the waters. One of my favorite things to do in the summertime when the weather's nice, and, the captain and everybody else would make sure you have a really great time. And also, if you want to get your swag on, Just for Kicks will hook you up. So if you want to hit them up, it's orders.j4k@gmail.com.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Thank you, everybody, for watching. Thank you for taking this journey with us. And we really, really enjoy talking about trading. As you can tell, we love this. We love this stuff. So a lot more to come as well, PJ, as you know. A lot more to come.
Yes, this is going to be an exciting year, man. Markets, we didn't pull up any charts today.
No, we didn't. We usually do. We usually do. It was tempting. Yeah, I was gonna pull up a Bitcoin chart, but I said let's leave that for the next show.
Yeah, that's no problem. Once we start, sometimes we can't stop. Yeah, most definitely. I think it's gonna be an exciting year, and we should see good things throughout the year.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, P.
All right.
Until next time.
Yes. Thanks again.
Thank you. Coming in hot.